Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 16th of May. Our guest this hour for all things political is Orrin Kass. Orrin is senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and focuses on energy, the environment, and anti-poverty policy. He was the domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012. His essays and columns have been published in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Washington Post, National Review, and many other publications. We'll be talking a lot about Donald Trump today. Paul Ryan, of course, met with Donald Trump on Thursday of last week, and he didn't endorse Donald Trump, but he said that he is impressed with the fact that he's bringing new voters to the Republican Party by the millions, and that's very impressive. So we will be talking about that. The New York Times did a major expose, which has been receiving a lot of attention yesterday, crossing the line, Trump's private conduct with women. We will talk about that and his unfavorability ratings among women in this country. Does he stand a chance of being elected with those kinds of ratings? And we will discuss that with our guest this hour. Tomorrow there are primaries in Kentucky and Oregon, a Democratic primary in Kentucky, and it appears that Bernie Sanders is going to do well in Oregon and may do well in Kentucky. There are now reports that this is making it much more difficult for him to stay in the race and actually to be winning quite a few primaries here. Is he making it more difficult for Hillary Clinton to get elected? Does that make a difference to you? Well, we'll welcome your phone calls as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. And we thank you very much for being with us, Orrin. Hi.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Hi, very nice to have you here. So let's start with Donald Trump. Are you for him or against him?
I'm against him.
Because?
Oh, any number of reasons. I think the most important one for me is that when you're choosing a president, I think you're choosing more for the things you can't foresee than the things you can. And you have to have a certain basic level of confidence that no matter how you feel about all the policy issues of the day, that if something goes really terribly wrong, whether you're talking about a 9/11 type attack or a 2008 type financial crisis, can you trust that the person is going to be calm and rational and try to do the best thing for the American people? And I think pretty unique of major political figures we've had in a long time, you can't say that about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do?
Well, at this point, I'm still waiting to see who ends up running. There are obviously a lot of issues underway to pull a third-party candidate into the race. And if there were a plausible third-party candidate who I was inclined to support, I would certainly be interested in that. If it were Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, I would certainly support Hillary Clinton.
Really? Would you really? Oh, that's interesting.
I think you have to be realistic about the choice that's out there. I mean, I think, you know, on the right today among conservatives, there's a lot of debate about what it means to support a third-party candidate versus supporting Trump versus supporting Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are two scenarios. In one scenario, you know, it doesn't matter. Either Clinton or Trump is far ahead and everyone's vote is just kind of symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
And in one scenario, there's a real close race between Trump and Clinton. And if it's a close race between Trump and Clinton, my view at least is that the most important thing is to make sure that Trump is not the person who wins that race.
Do you really? Where is the talk going on about a third party and whose name being mentioned?
Well, there are lots of names being mentioned right now. Ben Sasse, the senator from Nebraska, has been getting a lot of coverage. John Kasich has been talked about. Tom Coburn, a former senator, gets his name thrown around. I think I saw Mark Cuban's name out there. But, you know, the reality is that there are a couple of challenges. One is just getting on the ballot. It's very hard to get on the ballot, and especially at this point, there are already deadlines coming up or that are passed. And if you're not on the ballot, you're obviously not going to do very well. And then the other challenge is that you're almost certainly not going to win. And so if you're looking for somebody who's willing to dedicate their life to this and being ripped up by the media and the other candidates, knowing that they're not going to win, and if they're an elected official already, knowing that they're probably going to hurt their standing within their own party, then it's hard to find the person who wants to sign up for that.
Mm-hmm. So what do you make of the Paul Ryan Donald Trump meeting last week and Paul Ryan's comments at the Republican convention here in Wisconsin praising Trump, saying he's bringing all these new voters to the Republican Party? He goes on to say what we want to make sure going forward is that we're not doing anything but adding voters to the Republican Party column and not doing anything that subtracts voters going forward. But he didn't go so far as to endorse him. There's going to be a meeting this week sometime with Republican staffers and Trump aides. Do you imagine that he will eventually endorse him? Why hasn't the endorsement come now? What's he looking for from Trump? And the third part of the question is Trump doing something that subtracts voters going forward?
Well, to take the third part first, he absolutely is. I think you can try to do the math on whether he's adding more than he's subtracting, but there's certainly an enormous amount of damage that he's doing to the Republican brand from his approach to campaigning and to politics. You know, in terms of what Congressman Ryan, or I guess Speaker Ryan now, is pursuing, I think it's important to think of him as the leadership of all of the House Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And the position that other elected Republicans are in right now is very difficult. For some of them who are maybe genuine Trump supporters, it's easy. But if you're a Republican who signed up to be a Republican based on what Republican used to mean, not based on what Donald Trump represents, puts you in a very difficult position where, on the one hand, if you say, I'm not going to support Donald Trump, you have an awful lot of Republican voters back at home who are your base of support who are going to be very upset
right.
with that. And on the other hand, if you say you do support Donald Trump, you are equally enraging another group of people who you need to actually vote for you to win an election. And maybe damaging your reputation longer term. So I think what you saw when kind of all of a sudden out of nowhere the Republican primary just ended after Indiana and people thought they were going to have more time before they had to take a stand, you know, a few people got caught very quickly running toward just saying, well, I guess I have to say I support Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And what Paul Ryan, I think, is trying to do is provide a little bit more breathing room to people to say, look, it's an acceptable mainstream Republican position to say I'm not ready to support Donald Trump. And regardless of what he ultimately chooses to do, providing that face so that other congressmen and senators can say, well, I agree with Paul Ryan, is important for people who are not excited about Trump.
You were the domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012. We have heard Mitt Romney say that he couldn't endorse Trump. Will he vote for Clinton as well, or is he sitting this election out, or is he being approached for a third-party run?
Well, I certainly can't comment on who Governor Romney is going to support or vote for. It's been in the media that he's been involved in conversations about a third-party run. But I believe what he has said is that he will not vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people who are kind of what they call the never Trump crowd, I think that's the position you see most people taking, that they'll either write in a true conservative's name or they will find a third party candidate who they intend to support. Mm.
Orin, how do you explain Donald Trump's ascendancy?
I don't. I scratch my head. I was among the many people who got it completely wrong and am stunned that we are where we are. And I think most of the explanations that we hear out there are either kind of very self-serving of people promoting their own agendas or are just ignorant. So, you know, there's one set of explanations that says, essentially, let me pick whatever the issue I care most about is, and say, Donald Trump is winning because of that, and it proves me right. And you hear people saying that in directly opposite directions. So Donald Trump is a response to Republicans in Congress not compromising enough and being too hardcore. But then you also hear Donald Trump is a response to Republicans compromising too much and not following through on their promises. And then you hear that Donald Trump is a response to Republicans being tough on immigration and leading the base to believe that that we shouldn't have amnesty. And then you also hear it's because Republicans were too soft on immigration and said we should have amnesty, and on and on and on. obviously people have reasons for promoting those. I think when you actually study them logically, they almost never hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other set of explanations you hear a lot of is people just sort of stereotyping Trump supporters and saying it's because they're poor or uneducated or racist and so on and so forth. And the reality is, if you look at the data, that doesn't really hold up either. You know, one result that came out fairly recently is that the median income of Trump voters is over $70,000. So they're wealthier than the average American. And when you start to think about it that way, and you look at, you know, among the college educated, he certainly does better among people who have relatively less education, but he does awfully well with people who have a lot of education too. And so, you know, I've just not answered your question by saying all of the things that don't explain Donald Trump. In terms of what does explain Donald Trump, I think he's unique. I don't think we've ever seen anybody like him on the political stage. I think he's very adept at using the media and defining himself in a way that kind of breaks all the rules of politics. And I think we had a very, very strange Republican primary field. I mean, everyone was so excited about how strong the field was going in, but that turned out to be a pretty serious disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
And people like me always assumed, you know, at the end, the establishment was going to get behind one credible alternative, and in that one-on-one matchup, that person would beat Trump.
Right.
And I still, to this day, I think that if that had happened, that person would have beat Trump. I think if after New Hampshire, you know, heading into South Carolina, if everyone had said, wow, you know, this, we need to do something,
right,
and have the capacity to decide it's going to be, pick your person, I think things would have looked very different. But
mm-hmm.
in the end, you had Ted Cruz as the most credible alternative, who a lot of people were just not willing to support either. And even Cruz never actually got his one-on-one shot. I mean, Trump never had to go into a debate that had less than three other people in it. And so that is a very strange path to victory, in a sense. And I think that has to be a big part of it.
Yeah, what a year. Would you, it's interesting you started with third party and the talk about third party. Would you be supportive of Mitt Romney getting into the third party consideration?
If Mitt Romney were the third party candidate, I would certainly support him. And I wish he were president right now. I think it's a tough it's a tough job to ask him to take on, given how thankless it is. You know, there are a lot of people who you could say have something to gain from being the third party candidate. It could raise their profile. It could set them up to lead a future political movement in some direction. For Governor Romney, I think, you know, he's moved on past that point in his political career. And so it would be an extraordinary sacrifice to ask of him in return for, at the end of the day, you know, giving it people someone to vote for, but I'm not sure if that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me give you this quote, which I find interesting. It's from Matthew Tully in the Indianapolis Star. I think he writes, Trump is still being underestimated. His message of Make America Great Again is the clearest, most easily digestible of any we've seen in a long time. And in politics, a simple message is better. Unlike Clinton, Trump is compelling, funny, and larger than life, and Americans have a long history of choosing the candidate who's more comfortable in his or her own skin. So say what you will about Donald Trump, he is supremely comfortable playing himself, and in November, he might actually pull this off.
I think it's possible. I think, you know, initially, when the primaries were still in full swing, I kind of just, without thinking about it too much, assumed, well, obviously, Trump will get, you know, beaten by 15 points in a general election. Now that I actually think about it, and also now that, you know, we start to see some polling data, it looks like it's an election that could actually be much closer, and that he has a credible chance of winning. And frankly, it's a huge indictment of Hillary Clinton as much as anything. I mean, Hillary Clinton is really a uniquely ineffective politician, in a sense. I mean, if you look at what happened to her in 2007 and 2008, I mean, we all think of Barack Obama now as a two-term president, but given their relative starting points, it was it was a shocking collapse that led her to lose that. And then if you look at how ineffective she's been at even trying to pull away from Bernie Sanders, and if you look at how ineffective her initial attempts at confronting Trump have been, it's perfectly possible that she can't beat him. I think it will obviously depend a lot on how things play out over the next 6 months.
Yes.
But anyone who's saying, well, it's all right, Hillary Clinton will clean Donald Trump's clock, hasn't been watching Donald Trump, but frankly also hasn't been watching Hillary Clinton.
And just imagine how things are going to play out the next 6 months, or an ooh-wee. It's going to be something, huh?
It sure will.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We'll move to the Democratic side here because there are primaries tomorrow, and Bernie Sanders is still doing well. He's expected to win Oregon. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't win, probably by a large margin. Kentucky, maybe a closer race, but he may win in Kentucky tomorrow. And there are press reports that he's making it really hard for Clinton now, who has to run two campaigns, one with Sanders. She's not really attacking him very much, nor is he her, but also a general election campaign. So is he making it hard for her to get elected? And if so, should he leave, or does that not make a difference? Does he have a perfect right to stay in this race and bring forward issues that many Democrats feel are important? What do you think about all of this? And Orrin's, I was surprised by his answer here. Orrin Kass, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, was the domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012. And when asked at the top of the show, are you for him or against him? He's not for Trump. And if it were a Trump-Clinton race, he said he'd probably vote for Hillary Clinton, which I find interesting. Well, we welcome your phone calls. We have lines open for you at this very moment. We're concentrating, of course, on the presidential race. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. We want to talk about the New York Times expose front page yesterday, Crossing the Line, Trump's Private Conduct with Women. Have you read it? Do you think it's important to know this background? Is it a hit job on Donald Trump, as he has suggested? We'll take your calls and carry on this conversation on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, two phone calls. All things political. This hour, Orrin Kass is our guest, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, who focuses on energy, the environment, and anti-poverty policy. He was the domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012. And we start our calls with Jason in Portage. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I guess, and oh, hi, Orrin. Good to talk to
hi,
you.
Hi, Jason.
My basic, just going to be comments, I guess. I think that the whole thing about Trump, this whole sexism thing, I think everybody's making a big deal out of it. I do think it's a hatchet job on him. But I also would just like to say that I personally like the way that he is not so politically correct. I think political correctness has really turned us into a bunch of wimps, this whole country. I got to say it. I think that the United States is a lot of us that I'm uncomfortable with the whole political correctness. That's the way I feel about it.
Okay. Orrin?
Well, you know, I think this is a point that comes up a lot in defense of Trump, is this idea that people like that he's not politically correct. And, you know, I think there are two very different issues here. One is political correctness. And frankly, I agree with people who say we have a huge problem of too much political correctness in this country. And there are a lot of issues on which you could imagine a politician doing a really effective job pointing those things out and talking about how we need to move past it, whether it's talking about, you know, violent crime and the Black Lives Matter movement, and making the point that, you know, actually the overwhelming majority of African Americans who are killed are killed by other African Americans, not by police. That would be a not politically correct thing to say, that actually would advance would move something forward, perhaps. Or if you wanted to say, look, single mothers are doing a heroic job out there, but we know that two-parent families are the best things for kids, and we need to really push toward having more two-parent families. Some people might say that's politically incorrect, but at least it has a purpose. The thing about Donald Trump is that what people give him credit for being politically incorrect about isn't actually politically incorrect. It's just rude and offensive and a lot of times wrong. I mean, when you talk about the way he talks about women, the way he talks about Mexican immigrants, and so on and so forth, he's not speaking truth to power. He's not breaking through some taboo for the purpose of making a good point. He's just trying to rile people up. And so I think that's a really important distinction, and to recognize that we can push back against political correctness, but we don't have to crass in our dialogue as a country and embrace the kind of, you know, frankly, boorish behavior that Trump promotes. And in fact, what Trump's doing is pushing things exactly in the wrong direction and pushing us toward even less of the kind of dialogue that we'd like to have in the country.
Let's talk a little bit before we go back to the phone calls about yesterday's New York Times piece, Crossing the Line, Trump's Private Conduct with Women. Do you think that it was a hit job on him, as he has suggested, or is it illuminating in some way?
I didn't read it all that carefully myself, frankly. I looked through it, and what I was struck by immediately is that it, frankly, in a lot of cases, didn't seem as bad as what we've already heard from him live. I mean, if you look at what people already knew about Trump's behavior around women, his comments on the Howard Stern show, the way he treated mm-hmm. Megyn Kelly during the primary campaign, you know, frankly, that's bad enough. If the Times was breaking this news about a candidate that people didn't know this kind of stuff about, I think it probably would have opened a lot of people's eyes. I think it's fallen a little bit flat because people are kind of saying, yeah, we already knew that. And yeah, that's pretty much what we would have expected. And so that's a problem that's going to happen with a lot of hit pieces on Trump, where he, and that happened to a lot of Republican candidates who tried to attack him in the primary, where all of the terrible things about him are somewhat priced in a sense. And a lot of hit pieces or exposés, whatever you want to call them, that would be horribly damaging to other candidates are instead going to start having people just shrugging. And that's mm-hmm. exactly what Trump mm-hmm. wants. Well, that's what Trump wants,
yeah.
for all of this to just be people shrugging. And so I think it'll be important for the media to think about, when they're writing news stories about him, you know, what's the actual news here, and how are they advancing the public's awareness, as opposed to just trying to, you know, generate clicks.
And is it effective strategy? We've already heard some of this. We hear there will be more for him to take on Bill Clinton.
Well, I think it's certainly going to be effective for him, in that sometimes he'll score points with it, and it can't hurt him. I mean, nothing he could say at this point, I suspect, about Bill Clinton would surprise anybody. It's hard to imagine him saying something worse than, for instance, that Ted Cruz's father was an associate
exactly.
of Harvey Oswald.
Right.
And so, again, that's kind of priced in. So all of the blowback he doesn't have to worry about. And so if 90% of the things he says people just laugh off, and 10% of them kind of stick in people's minds or get their attention or generate bad stories for Hillary Clinton, then he's winning that at the end of the day. And so I think that's going to be a problem. And frankly, Hillary Clinton's record on that issue and on her relationship with Bill Clinton isn't going to help her a whole lot in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Rick in Monona, hi.
Yes, I'm asking about what your guest thinks about some of the politicians that at one time, I think this Representative King in New York said that he'd rather take poison than vote for Trump. And then he turns around and endorses him last week. Rick Perry did the same thing. And it's almost like they're putting party ahead of country, that Donald Trump, to me, is a pretty dangerous guy to have sitting with nuclear weapons. And yet these people seem to, even though they can't stand him, for the sake of their party, they're endorsing him. I'd just like to hear what your take is on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, it's a fascinating dynamic, and it's, I think, opening a lot of people's eyes to the way the party system works in the country as well. You know, if you're a steadfast Republican, you face a really tough choice right now. You know, I think some of the points Rick made about Donald Trump being dangerous are exactly right, but people also have a lot of reasons to be worried about Hillary Clinton. If a two-term Hillary Clinton presidency was going to mean multiple new appointments to the Supreme Court, you know, if she was potentially going to have control of Congress as well and do the things she said she's going to do on immigration, on other types of spending, you could say, gosh, I'm more scared about what the world is going to look like in 2025 when Hillary Clinton is leaving office than I am about what the world is going to look like in 2025 when Donald Trump's leaving office. I personally am more scared about Donald Trump, but it's not crazy either way, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot of Republicans who have, you know, they do have a lot of loyalty to their party, and it's also important to remember that they think of themselves as representatives of their voters. You know, usually we say that's a good thing, that they're listening to what their voters say, and the way the party system is supposed to work is that if you're on the Republican team and the team Republican voters say, we want Donald Trump, that's supposed to count for something for you. And so, you know, there are a lot of competing considerations, and from my perspective, it's really important to say, you know, we disagree with what they're doing, and I very strongly disagree, and I'm very disappointed in what people like Rick Perry and Bobby Jindal have done in supporting Trump. But it's also, from my perspective, important not to condemn them for it, because it's I can see their side of the story as well.
Chris from, let's move to the Democratic side for a moment. Chris from Wisconsin Dells believes that Bernie Sanders is staying in the race so that he can help shape policy at the convention. News stories, well, we've seen some of them and a lot of them today, saying that he is really hurting her now, Hillary Clinton, in her campaign against Donald Trump, and could keep her from winning the presidency. Is it hard to sort of run two things at the same time here, and is he hurting her or not?
You know, at the margin, I think he could be hurting her, but I think as we've been talking about this crazy 6 months ahead of us, you know, whether or not Hillary Clinton beats Donald Trump in November, I think almost certainly is not going to turn on the fact that she's still running against Bernie Sanders right now. And so from Bernie Sanders' perspective, you know, he's someone that the Democratic Party doesn't really have any power to discipline. He kind of can do whatever he wants, and this is his one moment in the sun, and he's clearly going to take it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Bob in Clay Banks. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I just wanted your guest to respond to a thought I had about why Trump is so popular. The Republican Party has kind of stirred up folks. Anger, especially with Obamacare, which they've sent, I don't know, 50, 60 resolutions to try and repeal it without any ideas for a replacement. And I think that that the fact that they've stirred the people up and they haven't really produced much in the last 8 years has got a lot of people looking at Trump just because he's promising some stuff that we're hoping the Republicans would do for him.
Or, yeah, I mean, you know, I think there are certainly people who feel that way. I think it's a little bit tough to lay too much of it at the feet of Republicans for as he said, stirring people up, because it's the Republican view that that they don't support Obamacare. You know, that's a perfectly reasonable policy position to have. You know, a lot of the predictions that critics of Obamacare made are coming true in terms of people losing their plans, in terms of it not covering nearly as many people as it was supposed to, in terms of it driving insurers out of the market. And so I don't think we can say somehow, well, Republicans shouldn't have been against Obamacare, you know, especially given that the American people have never really been in favor of Obamacare. Real Clear Politics, which is a website that archives lots of poll data, has more than 400 polls of opinion about Obamacare going back since it was passed, and never has a majority of the country said they support it. So I don't think you can blame Republicans for saying they want to repeal it. And then similarly, I think they've kind of done as much as they can, they could. I mean, they went and they've tried to repeal it, and they didn't have a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, and they didn't have the White House. So maybe people are stirred up about that, but if you kind of step back and think about where we are, it's hard to understand why Donald Trump would be your answer to that.
But you still have you have millions of people who have health insurance now who didn't have health insurance, and I bet if you polled them, they would find it to be a blessing to them. Don't you bear a responsibility if you say, I'm going to repeal this program, which is a signature program and has changed a lot of people's lives, for better or for worse, but has changed so many lives, that you can't just say, I'm going to repeal this on day one. You have to, as a party, unify and say, and this is what we present to you as a better alternative.
Well, I mean, we can have a long debate about Obamacare right now. I think the first thing to understand about it is that almost all of the additional people it's covering are just by putting more people on Medicaid. And so if what you actually told me had happened was President Obama chose to expand Medicaid in 2010 and Republicans said, we don't think that's a very good use of money, we don't want to do that Medicaid expansion, that would presumably be a perfectly reasonable political debate. I don't think it's a good idea to get into a world where you have a one-way ratchet, and as soon as someone manages to push through a piece of legislation, that's it. That becomes the new baseline. And I also think it's important to recognize that Republicans do offer alternatives, certainly not in the form of a 2,000-page bill. But if you think about what Governor Romney ran on in 2012 or Tom Price, I think, has a very good outline in Congress. My colleague Ovik Roy at the Manhattan Institute has put out a very thorough proposal. Paul Ryan puts out a lot of ideas. There are other ways to cover at least as many people as Obamacare has. But obviously the first step in any of that would have to be being a political situation when it could be repealed. And we haven't gotten there. And Donald Trump, by the way, has no better idea about how to get it repealed and certainly hasn't offered a better idea about what to replace it with. And so to think that somehow if you were upset about what was going on, therefore you should support Donald Trump, I think doesn't. It doesn't connect.
Thanks very much, Bob, for your call. Jerry in Stockbridge, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I would like to actually kind of counterpose some points that your guest just made a short while ago about Republican leaders and generally Republican voters supporting Trump as he would be the Republican nominee. And, he mentioned that, well, his constituents, their constituents, I should say, that voted them in, expect them to reflect their views. But at the same token, these people are going in there. They're involved, personally involved. They're supposed to do what is best first and foremost for the nation, instead of holding a party and a party alone as being their primary interest. They've got a higher duty. And to go around then yet on top of them, people like Perry, like Jindal, that were such fierce opponents and certainly made a lot of anti-Trump claims, and a lot of them certainly not unfounded, to turn around then, I mean, the hypocrisy is just terrible to begin with. But it's also a failure, in character and judgment in doing so.
Mm-hmm. Orin?
Well, I think that, from my perspective, highlights the exact distinction where I very much disagree with their choice to endorse Trump, but I think it's a mistake to call it a failure of character for a couple of reasons. One is that there's a very fine line between saying you should represent your constituents and saying, but no, you shouldn't. You should do what's best for the country. I mean, when people elect their leaders and send them to Washington, we usually say those people then have some obligation to pursue what they told their voters they were going to do. and what the voters want them to do. And so if we say, no, you get to tell voters whatever you want and tell them you're in whatever party you want and try to get as much power as you can, but then as soon as you have that power, you're no longer accountable to the voters at all. You're just supposed to do what's in the greater good of the country. There's an argument for that, and I think there are times when politicians face exactly that decision and have to make a tough choice. But I don't think it's a no-brainer to say, well, obviously, you know, what party you sign up for and what your voters want shouldn't have any bearing, and it's a failure of character if you pay attention to it. It's also a little bit different, admittedly, to say, you know, we're talking about what politician you endorse the same way you would talk about maybe what policy you would pursue. I mean, you know, someone like Bobby Jindal or Rick Perry did not run for office on a promise to someday endorse Donald Trump. So I would say they have more flexibility and bear more accountability for their choice to support Donald Trump. I would just say it's also important to keep in mind for them and for a lot of people that choosing between him and Hillary Clinton is frankly a very close choice. You can paint a terrible scenario where Donald Trump is the worst thing that happens to the country, and you can also paint a scenario where having the Republican Party blow up right now and abandon their nominee and let Hillary Clinton win by 25 points and carry the Senate and the House with her, and what happens in that world is the worst thing for the country. And you know, particularly the people who have spent their life in Republican politics are likely to, in perfectly good faith, probably come out closer to the Donald Trump side of that. Mm.
I think most people are not going to vote. I mean, and that's purely from talking to a lot of people who just have said to me that they're just not going to, they don't like her, they don't like him, they're not voting in the presidential side of the ticket. I wonder how much of that is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's very easy to say right now, as it is for all the people who are saying, well, I'm going to write in a principled third-party candidate. I think the reality is if we get to October and it's a 1 or 2 point race and a couple swing states are toss-ups, I think people are going to choose sides and get pretty insistent about voting pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was thinking, I don't know if you saw the New York Review of Books review of Donald Trump's book. It appeared a little while ago, and it's a fascinating article. I wonder how much of this is true, because I got to tell you, Oren, I just don't watch a lot of reality television. Obviously, you can't live in America and not know who Donald Trump is, but I haven't watched the shows. He isn't a huge celebrity to me. I'm aware of who he is, but kind of peripherally, because you have to know that. But the article seemed to indicate in some ways a couple things. One is that he is so well known, he's a personality, unlike any of the politicians who are running, except for Hillary Clinton, who's a personality due to what she's done and who she's been, but that everybody knows who this guy is. They watch his television shows. They were hits on television. Plus, he's such a hit on television that he's had like $2 billion worth of free advertising on all of these shows, on cable particularly, not having to spend a cent because everybody covers all of his appearances and all of his speeches. Is this the world that we're operating in, that if you're kind of the star in reality television, that you've got a leg up on anybody else?
A little bit. I mean, I think the second part of what you mentioned, I think, is more important, which is that once he started running, he got such a disproportionate share of the coverage. And that goes partly back to the fact that there were 16 other guys running, and none of them really could match that kind of interest. And so I think that combination of Trump being someone who had this larger-than-life personality really then, of course, played that up with the way he launched his campaign and the things he said in the first few weeks. He was something people wanted to hear more about, and the media was therefore happy to focus on him. And he was then great at accelerating that cycle. And so the result of that is that most of what anybody had heard about the campaign was about Donald Trump. The question, of course, is what do voters do with that information? I mean, there's the saying there's no such thing as bad publicity, but at the end of the day, it is the responsibility of voters to actually listen to what they're hearing and decide how they feel about it. And I think, you know, whereas in a Donald Trump-Hillary Clinton race, there are a lot of kind of difficult choices that people have to make. In the Republican primary, I think it's very hard to understand how someone who always identified as a Republican and in theory had some sort of preference for some of the principles and policies that Republicans stood for, how they could choose Trump over all of the other options that they had. But obviously they did, and that reflects a failure of imagination and understanding on my part.
I want to talk about Bernie Sanders next, and we'll do that. Orrin Cass is our guest, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He was the domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012. And at the top of this show, in case you're just tuning us in, if faced with the choice of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, Orrin says he would have to vote for Hillary Clinton, although he would be in favor of a third party run and thinks maybe the time is right for a third party and wouldn't be at all unhappy if Mitt Romney were heading that third party. Well, what do you think? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. One line is open for you right now. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at Kay Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right. Bernie Sanders, just for a moment, why is it that the Democratic Party hasn't? Well, obviously, it's interesting that you've got this Democratic socialist who's 74 years old, who's really given Hillary Clinton a run for her money with very clearly articulated ideas and really offering people in many ways more than anybody else in terms of a bright future. And I don't know, a lot of people are worried about how we would pay for it, but he is being embraced by huge numbers of young people in this country and has done very, very well in this race. How do you explain that, and why? What's kept him from overtaking Clinton, do you think?
Well, I'm glad we get to talk about Bernie for a minute, because the great tragedy of Trump is that if not for Trump, we could be spending all of our time talking about Bernie, who would then be the most bizarre political story of the last 50 years, probably. I mean, the fact that he has caught on like he has and that he's challenged Hillary Clinton this aggressively and this successfully is really shocking, and I think is as eye-opening about the Democratic Party as Trump's success was about in the Republican Party. Because, you know, I think you were very generous in your description of him as someone with very clearly articulated ideas. Most of what he's saying makes no sense. And, you know, in interviews with editorial boards and so forth, it turns out he doesn't really know what to do with it either. I mean, his health care plan is, I think, $17 trillion of additional spending. His plan for the banks reflects almost no understanding of how the financial system works or how our government policies in that area works. He has no foreign policy knowledge or policy, as far as most people can tell. And yet, some combination of liking socialism and hating Hillary Clinton has left an awful lot of Democrats running in his direction.
Well, I think you're underestimating what he's done, though. He has offered plans. I mean, you're dismissing him pretty much out of hand, but he has offered more details in all of those areas, I think, than you have just stated. And maybe they can't be done, but certainly other countries have universal health care, and certainly other countries have free college. So it's not as though it's pie in the sky ideas. He's articulating some of what we're seeing in reality, particularly in some European countries, aren't we?
Well, I think it's important to understand how they pay for that. And if you look at the tax burden, specifically on the middle class that's born in those countries, it's entirely different from what it is in the United States. And so if he wanted to run on that platform and explain how he was going to raise tens of trillions of additional dollars of money to pay for it, that would be fine. But obviously he hasn't. And so, you know, to campaign on essentially creating a European social democratic state without any acknowledgement or reference to the associated tax base, frankly, I think would not be taken seriously in most contexts if it were not the 74-year-old socialist from Vermont. Mm-hmm. And much as Republicans suffered from Trump being held to a very different standard. I think Clinton is suffering from Sanders being held to a very different standard.
There is something about both parties missing what's going on with people who are just, you know, working their jobs and not making as much money as they did some years ago and got really badly hit by the housing crisis. And otherwise you wouldn't have a Sanders and a Trump, I don't think, because people are hurting and the parties don't seem to be responding to that.
That's true to some extent. I think the strange question is why is it happening right now? I mean, for instance, people were hurting much worse in 2012 than they are right now. And yet, if you think longingly back to the days of Romney and Obama as two kind of very credible, respectable, serious leaders of their respective parties, that's what we had 4 years ago. And in the 4 years since, you know, I think we've maybe not had as strong an economic recovery as we should have. But the economy has grown over the last 4 years. Unemployment rate has declined over the last 4 years. And so to have 2016 be this sudden moment of anger and rebellion is a little bit surprising compared to all of the previous years we've had. 2016 really isn't such a bad year in America.
Let's get some more phone calls before we have to say so long. Adele in Eagle River, hi.
Hi. Going back a little bit, considering that Mitt Romney or somebody might try to be a viable third-party candidate, kind of taking reference to the idea of a public servant versus doing something political to try to further their political career for the next election, it's too bad that more of our officials don't look at truly the public servant ideal and serve the public instead of their own political agendas or the party's agendas. So just a comment.
All right. Thanks, Adele. Oren?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the first thing to say is that we have a lot of excellent public servants out there, and I wouldn't confuse choosing to run a third-party presidential bid as kind of a measure of someone's commitment to public service. You know, running a third-party presidential bid, first of all, you have to ask even what's the goal. Is the goal just to give people someone to vote for with no expectation of achieving anything? If I guess that's a public service, but people have the right and opportunity already. Is the goal to poll well enough to get into the debates and represent a credible third view that's very different than what Clinton and Trump would offer? I think that's a much more serious goal, and I think there are several people who might be able to provide that. Or is the goal to win? And if you'd say public service means running to win, then you should only do that if you actually think you could win. And I think that gets certainly harder to picture. So I think it's that middle case that's most interesting. It's who is someone who would make sense as a third-party candidate, who could represent conservative principles, poll well enough to be a participant in the debates and the media coverage and so forth. And it's not unreasonable to ask also who would want to do that. I mean, we could say everybody should jump in and do it for the country, but I think it's a lot more realistic to say, you know, let's find somebody who can do that well and for whom that might, you know, for whom that might actually have an appeal, because running for president is one of the least pleasant things to do in America.
Oren, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate your insights and your time today. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Oren Cass. Oren is senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and he was the domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012. He writes extensively. His work has been published in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Washington Post, National Review, and many other publications. Thanks very much to KP Whaley for producing the hour. Thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Stay with us for the next hour of our program. Fences is the last production this year of the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, August Wilson's play, and it's a good one, very well directed and acted. We'll talk with the director following the news.